everybody. We are back, and I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. And that really was a mouthful, wasn't it, that last part? I really encourage you to read the book, but like we were saying before, you need to turn everything else off and focus 100%. But I believe you'll get a lot out of it. I know I did. Moving on to the next book that I want to talk about, Cash Cow. I have in the studio Elise Desaulniers.
Desaulniers. Yeah, you get it right.
Merci. She is an independent scholar and animal rights activist who published her first book on ethics, Je mange avec ma tête, which means I eat with my head, in 2011. She co-authored two articles in the Encyclopedia of Food and Agricultural Ethics and won the Quebec Grand Prize for Independent Journalism for a piece on feminism and anti-speciesism in 2015. A frequent lecturer and presenter at colleges and universities, she lives in I'm like saying half French and half English. Montreal, Montréal. Okay. Hello.
Hello. Thank
Elise.
You for having me.
Thank you for coming. All right.
Your French is very, very good. We should do an interview in French.
Okay.
That's yes, true.
I would love to do that some other time,
yes.
I suppose, because I don't think my listeners would really appreciate it if we did it all in French right now.
It will be just you and me.
But just to explain a little bit,
yes.
I have studied opera and musical theater, and I was singing quite a bit in France at the time, so I really studied pronunciation. I've probably gotten a little more relaxed since I'm not living there anymore, and all speaking and pronunciation is related to muscles.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're not speaking a language, your muscles get soft.
Well, that's the story of my life. In English, I understand English perfectly. I can write fine, but speaking is another thing, and the TH and other and all of that's terrible. So I'm sorry for your listener.
Well, I'm sure many people have told you that Americans love French accents and British accents,
yes,
and versions thereof, but we love those things, so don't lose that.
Thank you.
I first noticed this phenomenon about the musculature in the mouth when I moved from New York to California, and I lived in California for about 9 years, and then whenever I would visit New York and go back to speaking New York, I felt this weight in my tongue.
Well,
because New
yes.
York is such a heavy language, and it just was so heavy on my tongue. It was a phenomenal thing.
So it's not only me, because when I speak English, it hurts, really.
It hurts to speak English.
I'm suffering right now.
That's funny. I also tell people when they want to speak French correctly, it's all in the lips. You must
yes.
pout and look like you just want to kiss everyone. And then everything sounds so much better. All right, let's talk about milk.
Yes.
Milk. Milk is not a poison, you've said in your book, although some of us have called it a poison. But there's a lot of things that are not right with dairy milk or milk from animals.
Mm-hmm.
So let's jump into Cash Cow.
Yes.
Right. So why did you write this book?
Well, like you said earlier, it's my second book. So the first book was about food ethics in general, and I gave a lot of lectures on the topic. And, well, most people agreed with me, at least you should reduce your meat consumption, even I'm vegan, and I'm talking about veganism, but they agree on some principle. But when we came to dairy, especially French, and Quebecers are the same, we love dairy, we love cheese, we love yogurt, so they agreed on the principle, but don't talk about dairy. Don't talk about cheese. Don't tell me to stop eating cheese. I said, well, there's something strange about dairy.
Mm-hmm.
There's something strange with our relationship with cows. There's something there that I should look in depth. So that's why I started researching. And I understood how my relationship with dairy and our relationship with dairy is built on false beliefs and that are probably made from the industry, advertising, but also the fact that cheese is good and it doesn't come direct. Well, it's not the animal flesh, so it's maybe harder to see the link between the animal suffering and being exploited and the thing we put on our bread. So it's complicated.
It's complicated. I'm not promoting dairy ever. But I'm thinking that a long time ago, hundreds, thousands of years ago, whenever we started consuming dairy products, it probably wasn't as detrimental to it to us as it is today. People are consuming far more dairy products than ever before, and we didn't feed the animals or take care of the animals the same way as we do today, and I probably shouldn't even use the word care, because there's no care involved today, really. But there's a romance, and I think it started a long time ago, this romance with animals, and believing that what they gave us was good for us.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up. Nobody ever asked me a question about that. And during my research, I interviewed Renan Larue. He's a French researcher. He works on the history of vegetarianism. And he told me how, well, for most of our history, like, being vegan was not something you could imagine. We needed animals. We needed cows. Cows were useful in the fields and in our lives, so we were not always thinking about killing cows, but using them, we needed them, and using a bit of their milk for our own consumption was just fine. So we couldn't imagine living without cows, so we couldn't imagine being vegan. So for most of our life history, it was the case. It's completely different today, but that might explain why vegetarianism came before veganism, because, well, cows were just part of life. Same thing for hens.
I don't think when we started our relationship with cows that we were artificially inseminating them
or raping them,
which is what I like to say.
No, we were not.
And that's one of the worst things in my mind whenever I don't do this often. I don't care to do it. But when I go online and go to these university sites that describe how animals are artificially inseminated, it's just the most disgusting, horrific thing. And it's all considered on board and perfectly acceptable. But that didn't happen then. And the animal, the babies,
They lived with their mother.
They lived with their mother. It was a very different situation.
But the industry is still telling us that story, which is the past.
Yes, way past.
And even me, I mean, I went to university, I'm educated, I'm reading, and I spent most of my life, well, not thinking about it. But when I became vegetarian and quickly after became vegan, but in between, a friend asked me, how do you think milk is produced? Well, by cows. And she said, well, I think cows need to have a baby in order to produce milk. I was, no, are you sure?
Exactly.
And I mean, I'm reading papers every day, and I'm online, I'm researching, and I didn't know that. And I didn't know the link between veal and dairy, and it was all the same thing. I just didn't know that. So for most of people around us, they just have no idea. And when you look at the milk carton, well, you see a happy cow in the field with her baby, and it makes us feel good to think that reality is that.
Yeah, I think you mentioned in your book that knowing that there is a way to treat animals relatively decently, we somehow accept treating them horribly.
Because there's this slight possibility.
There's a possibility that it could be that way.
Every talk I give about dairy, there's always somebody sitting in the back, raising her or his hand, saying, like, but what if I have a cow in my backyard? Yeah, sure, you're living in Montreal, come on. But what if I have a cow in my backyard and I treat her nicely and she stays with her baby and blah, blah, blah? And that idea always come up. What if? And yes, of course, but it's what if, like,
I was
peace on the heart.
I had Dr. David Katz on the show a few years ago. He's a medical doctor and an expert in nutrition at Yale. And he's done some great work. He wrote a book, Disease Proof something or other. Anyway, his wife is French. And I once visited her blog, and she was talking about organic dairy. And I just very politely mentioned some of the issues that I thought she'd like to know about. And she was very polite and very gracious and said she has to find out more about this. Well, she got her milk from some local organic dairy, and she was went to that farmer and came back feeling better somehow, that it was okay. And then I came back again and said, you know, do you see how he inseminates the cows, by the way? And, you know, the conversation was done. But there are lots of people, not just French people, but especially French people, that really have a hard time.
Well, because
with this.
There's also a long part of the process that we don't see. Like you mentioned, we don't see insemination, and we don't see the slaughterhouse. So yes, especially in France, where cows go outside, it's not the case in Quebec, where 94% of the cows are just inside, and with chains and everything, they are not free at all. But in France, you see cows outside. So you imagine, well, it's fine, and it looks good in the fields and all of that. So because we don't see all the process, and we don't think about it because it's going to make us feel bad thinking about it, it makes it easier to consume dairy. But you're right, organic dairy is the worst because you pay a lot more. So since you pay a lot more, you feel a lot better. And people that buy organic dairy want to do the good thing. So it's hard to tell them, well, no, it's as bad. I don't know for American organic milk. But in Quebec, well, it's cold, you know, during the winter and sometimes even during the summer. So cows go outside only once a week during summer. The rest of the time, it's exactly the same as the conventional. And the slaughtering is exactly the same. So it's...
Yeah, so there are so many issues, and this is the most important issue to me, which is the ethical portion, the cruelty portion. The reason why I became vegetarian and vegan is because I don't believe in causing pain and suffering. I don't want to kill animals, period. And I was very happy, delighted to learn that there are all these bonuses for not eating animals. It's better for the environment, it's best for the environment, and it's the best thing for my health. So yay for all of those good things. So let's just touch on the health and the environment for a moment.
It's important because when we question the dairy consumption, people will tell you, well, but what about your calcium? And what about that? And what about, so it's normal, natural, and necessary to consume dairy. You need to cover that. You need to explain, well, no, you don't need calcium. Well, you need calcium, of course, but you can find it in your green leafy, blah, 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 and we all know that. But there's also health problems related to dairy consumption. And for some people, that's the extra argument that will have them at least look at their dairy consumption. For instance, since cows are pregnant where they give milk, there is hormones in their milk, natural hormones. I know in the States you're adding hormones.
No, please.
Sorry. Yeah. But in Canada, we don't do that. We're really, really proud. We're Canadian. We don't put hormones in our milk. Well, yes, but your cows are pregnant. So since they're pregnant, there is pregnancy hormones in your milk, and you consume that. And that consumption is linked to breast cancer, ovarian cancer, prostate cancer, and well, it's some things you need to look at. It's an allergen. We talk a lot about a food allergy, but all those autoimmune reactions are reaction to the milk protein. So these are facts, and even Harvard School of Public Health agree with me on that, and they're not vegan, they're not promoting veganism. But they say, well, you should consume less milk and find other sources of calcium and vitamin D that is added to milk and protein and stuff, yes.
Yeah. Phew.
Yes.
There's nothing good about milk.
No. And in terms of environment, well, we talk about meat and stuff, but of course your cows are also ruminants, so it's the same problems. And with water, you need three times more water to produce 1 gallon or liter or whatever of cow's milk than you need for soy milk. So in California,
please,
if you have listeners there who are turning off their water and being careful in restaurant, not taking a glass of water to save water, well, good, but they should only switch from cow's milk to soy milk in their latte, and they would do so much more for water consumption reduction.
Drink soy lattes in California,
yes,
folks.
Please,
soy lattes,
please.
Or almond lattes. You know, I know the almonds are getting a bad press because they take a lot of water, too.
But it's still better than cow's milk.
That's right.
But soy is so efficient. So in your latte in the morning, switch to soy milk, and it's good.
It's good, and you don't have to worry about those phytoestrogens in the soy milk. They're not the same as the hormones that you find in cow's milk, which are so much more detrimental. The soy when you're eating a whole or minimally processed soy food, those phytoestrogens that you get there are your friends.
And even if you had breast cancer or at risk of breast cancer, like I am, my two grandmothers died from breast cancer, it's actually doing good for you. Mm-hmm. There's only one source that says that soy is bad for you, and it comes from the meat industry. So only one source, it's the meat industry. And of course, we're against them.
So how did you get so smart?
I don't think I'm that smart. I don't think so. Maybe by drinking soy milk, I would say. No, but I've spent my life doing tons of things. I've worked in advertising, worked for an airline, and a few years ago, I met a book on animal ethics, so philosophy book, like serious book with a lot of footnotes. My boyfriend ordered because he's a philosopher. And we didn't know, like, he's French and he likes cheese and everything. Not anymore, but at that time. And we didn't, he did his PhD in philosophy, never heard about animal ethics. But he ordered that book because he was teaching an ethics class. And, like, we heard it was like this new topic and hot. So, and I had the book in my bag, started reading it, and my first thought was, I have cats, I love them, and I'm eating animals that suffer, and I felt stupid. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I'm right, but I felt stupid not thinking about that by myself, like where do animals I'm eating are coming from. So I started reading and reading, and you know the basic stuff like Peter Singer and Regan and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, how come that happened around me and I never heard about it? And, well, I put the fault that I'm on the case and that I'm French. And in French, we don't have that much literature on animal ethics. So it's probably because I'm French. But started reading in English about the topic and writing about it. For me, it was important to read and write at the same time just to share my knowledge with people that needed that information. So I started blogging. And the more you write, the more you have to think. And inside, I was vegetarian and became vegan really quickly, but I tried to find ways to continue eating meat and cheese. But the more I was reading, the more I was convinced that I was wrong. So same for the boyfriend. He became vegan too.
Oh, good.
And we met a lot of people around us that were starting also to think about those issues. And right now in Montreal, I don't know if it's the climate that gives us a lot of time inside to read and think, but there's a lot of people working on those issues. We might be late, but I think like we're catching up. The young people in universities, in college, we call it cégeps, I feel like half of them are vegetarian or vegan or thinking about it. And like the intersectionality issues, like exploitation of animals linked to women exploitation. And
it's all connected.
It's all connected.
It's all the same.
But for them, it's like they all agree with that. And it's simple. There's something going on right now. And it gives me a lot of hope on the future.
That's very encouraging to hear. I just took a little road trip with my partner Gary this weekend. We like to see the autumn leaves, and we drove up north to Ithaca and then back down to Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, near Bucknell, where I went to college a long time ago. And so we spent some time at the university, and number one, I found a little restaurant that served tofu scramble. Which was amazing. It wasn't very good, but
it's
I'm
amazing.
Glad it was
it's
there.
Amazing. Yes,
it was there, and they served soy milk for my tea, and you know I was in heaven. And you know this is all new. And then you were mentioning reading ethics and philosophy. I met up with Dr. Gary Steiner, who is a philosopher at Bucknell, and he's written a number of books on animal ethics, and he's come up with the vegan imperative. That's kind of his catchphrase. And he explains what the vegan imperative is. I spoke to him on this show a few years ago, and he and his wife made a lovely lunch for us this weekend, which was all vegan and fun because we do a lot of cooking, and I post a lot of recipes all the time. We do food shows, and people are afraid to have us over, not just because we're vegan, but because we cook a lot. So it was really nice for people to make us meals. But I wanted to talk a little bit about France.
Yes.
because I did live in the south of France from 1992 to 1996, as we were talking earlier. Nobody talked about vegetarianism, and I never met another vegetarian at that time. And I was delighted years later to discover the Veggie Pride Parade originated in Paris. They came out of the closet, literally. And but I have to give my friends a lot of credit, because they did go out of their way whenever they had events to make sure that there would be food for me, which was really lovely. But I remember one man would talk about the foie gras, and he was absolutely convinced that the birds were delighted to be in their situation, how they would run for the food, they would run to have the tube shoved down their throat, and they were very happy.
Yes. Well, I have worked for an airline for many years. As I told you before, this airline was Air France. So when I became vegan, I was still an Air France employee and spending a lot of time in Montreal, of course, but also a lot of time in Paris. And first day being vegan, I used to travel business class. So I was really, really happy. I can try the vegan meal in business class. Well, it was terrible. The first serving was only veggies. Second service were the same veggies but cooked with rice. And the third dessert was fruit. So, and the morning after, at the Air France cafeteria, there was nothing I could eat except rice.
And baguette.
And maybe rice, but it was tasting like chicken, so probably chicken. So it was terrible. So it was like 9 years ago. And now I go back once or twice a year, and it changed a lot. Paris is the capital of gastronomy in the world, but it's becoming the capital of vegan gastronomy. There's really, really, really good restaurants, and like a new restaurant every week. There's a lot of really, really good cooks there that are writing books and like amazing books. I mean, they know what good food is, so when they cook vegan food, it's good. So it's changing a lot, and because of a few really influential people that have a huge influence. The group L214 in Lyon, they do amazing work. They are like Mercy for Animals, but in France. But they don't have much money, but they're doing huge things. So they do
in Lyon.
In Lyon, but also all around France. And so there is things going on all over France to teach what veganism is, what vegan food is, the arguments, but they also do campaigns against foie gras around Christmas time. They did an undercover investigation in a slaughterhouse, and that video went all over the place in France. France suddenly realized what a slaughterhouse was, and they did the headlines and all the news. So there is a lot going on in France right now and in Quebec. At the same time, because like we talk to each other.
Of course. French, well, I know that as soon as France and all related to France get over themselves, they will definitely take the lead.
Yes. Well, they're good thinkers. French philosophers are good philosophers. So now they're starting. And they will tell you that you're late. Yes, maybe. But they're starting to think about animal issues, and they will do great. I mean, if you look at all the Bush book published in France, in French on animal topics in the last years, there's a lot, and there's a lot going on. So I'm really proud.
I'm excited and sad at the same time, because I'm sorry it wasn't happening when I lived there. It was not easy. But in some ways, I want to think, well, maybe I, in some small way, I spread a few seeds when I was there.
Well, I think that's what happened, because when you look at the history, there's like you start to go from the beginning. There's always somebody saying, hey, I had this neighbor, I had this roommate, I had 20 years ago, and she told me, and that's my case, I had a vegetarian roommate, and I thought she was crazy, but I remember what she told me. And her arguments came back 20 years after when I read the book. So, yeah, every little seed is important.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned Lyon, and I've told the story before, but when I lived in France, I was in Lyon first before I went to Aix-en-Provence, and my boyfriend at the time wanted to celebrate my birthday. So he called Chez Bocuse. Are you familiar with that restaurant? So Chef Bocuse,
I've never been there.
Is world-renowned. And So 2 weeks in advance, he asked, could you serve a vegetarian, a végétalienne, like me? Mm-hmm. And they said, sure, no problem. And then 2 days before, he sent a fax to remind them, and we showed up, and they had no clue who we were, and the dinner was a disaster, and they charged an arm and a leg, and the French don't normally really want to be confrontational or argue in a restaurant scenario, but my boyfriend did talk to the maitre d' and told him the problem, and this guy was trying to explain, we have 25 chefs in the kitchen, we can't possibly do anything for you. I mean, it made no sense. It was the middle of the week, nobody was there, and but I'm sure even in that restaurant they could probably do something better today.
Well, now we have a chef in Montreal, and he used to work for Bocuse, and now he's working for Normand Laprise at Turkey, who's like the best chef in Montreal, and this guy is vegan, and you can hire him to cook at your place if you want. But that's interesting you mentioned végétalien. In French, we have two words for vegan. We have vegan, and we have végétalien, and it's so complete. Well
that's French.
There's
always the French word and then the other word that everyone uses.
Yes.
But Elise, I'm sorry, we're out of time.
Oh no.
Believe it or not.
Already?
Already. Déjà. So thank you very much for joining me. Please check out the book Cash Cow, love the title, and learn more about why you don't want to consume dairy, and if you have family and friends who are consuming dairy, maybe you want to share this book with them. Okay, thank you for joining me, Elise.
Thank you.
And I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. You can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com, where you can find a phenomenal cashew cheese fondue recipe. I recommend it for Halloween and any time, any great party. Email me at info@realmeals.org, and remember, have a delicious week. Bye-bye. That's it.